third case is number 03-3081, Kira Morrison against Panduit Corporation. Mr. Warner.
Good morning, Justices. If it please the Court, I'm Anderson J. Ward. I represent Ms. Kira Morrison, who is the plaintiff and appellant in this matter. Your Honor, this likewise is a Title VII case. Ms. Morrison brought an action alleging violation of her rights under Title VII in the form of intentional unlawful employment practices. The defendant in this matter, Panduit Corporation, brought a motion for summary judgment in the district court. The court granted that motion, finding that Ms. Morrison failed to create a reasonable inference that the defendant's stated explanation for termination was not the actual reason for firing her, or that racial discrimination played any role in that decision in violation of Title VII. We believe that the district court erred in granting summary judgment. We believe the district court ignored material issues of fact, especially as related to the defendant's reduction in force policy. And this was a policy that had been changed from another reduction in force policy that had been used only 2 weeks prior to Morrison's termination. Now, Ms. Morrison has set forth facts that support her claim of discriminatory discharge. There were some 14 or 15 bullet points that were raised in her brief, and of course, I'm not going to recap those here. But we believe that most, if not all, of those facts were subject to interpretation of the fact finder. We believe that credibility on many of these issues becomes an important facet of the case, and of course credibility not being appropriate at the summary judgment level. For that reason, if for no other, we would argue that the case should be remanded for further proceedings. Now, the defendant in this case has acknowledged the change in policy by indicating in their documents that the second policy was not racially biased. So there's no doubt among the facts that the policy was changed. However, when the existence of a uniform policy or practice is in doubt, it cannot serve as a reason for discharging an individual. And in this case, 2 weeks earlier, one policy was used. 2 weeks later, a new policy is used. Now, because Morrison was the only individual deemed excellent by her employer who was actually terminated in either of these RIFs, the first or the second one, all others were relatively the poorest performers in their category. She was then the only person who was affected outside the original RIF policy. Facial neutrality is not enough to prevent a finding of discrimination if the adoption of the policy were designated to discriminate. We believe the district court also erred in its ruling pertaining to the same actor inference that Ms. Morrison raised in her pleadings. In a response in opposition to Panduit's motion for summary judgment, Ms. Morrison conceded that Joanne Tyree, who was a vice president in the organization, approved the decision to hire her. Panduit, in its motion for summary judgment, in essence, cast her as the decision maker. We don't believe that's the case. While Ms. Tyree may have approved the hiring of Morrison, an individual by the name of James Toporsky actually made the decision to hire her. Toporsky was a manager in Panduit and was the manager of the department in which Ms. Morrison worked. The approval on the part of Tyree is no evidence that she wanted Morrison as an employee because Tyree, of course, approved all hirings from all managers. So her involvement doesn't cast any suggestion of her wanting to keep her as an employee and finding her a favorable employee. All she did was approve the hiring.
Counsel, what evidence is there in the record of similarly situated employees not in the protected class who were treated more favorably?
Well, we had, I can't give you the total number of employees actually RIFed and the total number of employees retained. But what we had was supposedly a ranking of employees based on performance. But we also have a directive from the company president saying that performance, at least as delineated on an earlier occasion, should not be used in making those determinations, performance evaluations. We believe that there were a number of employees, and again, we've raised the names and identities of several of those in our pleadings, who were not in a protected class, who were retained.
Did any of them have the same de minimis seniority as your client? It's my understanding that she was on the job for 2 months.
Well, that's a misnomer in a couple of ways. She was actually employed several years earlier in a consulting capacity. Another issue of fact that we believe the trier of fact should have the opportunity to examine. Panduit argues that they brought in consultants and used them in a consulting capacity. However, what we find is that many of those consultants brought in, and certainly in Ms. Morrison's case, was an African-American who was employed for a long while as a consultant, working in the very same department, doing the very same projects that she was doing when ultimately hired. Along the way, her employer, her manager, Mr. Taporsky, indicated that he wanted her to consider full-time employment. For some reason, it didn't work out at that point in time. The record's unclear in that.
I thought she turned it down.
Turned it down immediately because she was under the impression that there had to be a hiatus in time between when she worked for her.
Regardless of the reason, she turned it down. She was an employee of this company for 2 months at the time that she was laid off. Was there anybody else with that same level of seniority and experience as an employee with the company who is outside the protected class that was treated more favorably, in other words, retained?
We believe, yes.
And who was that person?
Well, as I said, I didn't make a list of those names today, and I apologize. They're in our pleadings.
I mean, if you can't show that, then the case is over.
I understand. I will pass to my colleague now, if you'll allow me, and I'll gather those names.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Ward. We'll hear now from Mr. Warner.
Good morning. Michael Warner on behalf of Appellant Panduit Corporation.
Before you start, do you know the answer to my question?
No, there were no similarly situated people, both with respect to the issue of seniority and performance, because when Ms. Tyree decided how she was going to determine the reduction, and this was the second reduction of 10 employees when she had to determine a different way than she did the first time, and the fact she changed would have no inference of racial discrimination. She was faced with how do I do this objectively as possible. So she looked at performance, critical skills, and seniority. Ms. Morrison was the most junior person. So if you had relied exclusively on seniority, she would have been the first one to go. Performance was an issue. But Ms. Tyree said, in order to have the most objective way of determining performance, I'm going back to our formal performance evaluations, which is as she testified, is a two-week process where people are evaluated according to their a standardized criteria, and Ms. Tyree gets involved to make sure those are consistent. Mr. Ward, in his argument, made the contention that Ms. Morrison was the only person reduced who was deemed an excellent ploy. The record doesn't support that. All the record supports is that Jim Taporsky, her immediate supervisor, felt she was an excellent employee, and we do not dispute that. The point is, when it came to determining performance, Ms. Tyree decided, when I have to reduce 10 people, I can't go to my supervisors and ask them who I should reduce, because they're all going to want to protect their employees. They're all going to profess to say, yes, they are excellent and I should keep them. And to avoid that type of ad hoc subjective feeling on the part of the department, she went to the most logical source, the formal performance evaluation system. Because Ms. Morrison had only been employed for less than 3 months, she was not only the most junior employee, she had not had the benefit of a formal performance evaluation, and therefore could not compete with the others on that basis as well. And there's no possible suggestion that that could raise an inference of race discrimination. Similarly, she did not have any critical skills, which was the other reason employees would be retained. So there are no similarly situated employees. I think overall what has to be recognized in this case is what the Supreme Court has said in Anderson versus Liberty Lobby, that in order to rebut a summary judgment motion, there must be genuine issues of material fact that preclude summary judgment as a matter of law. Simply because there are some alleged disputed facts, those facts have to affect the outcome of the case. And that's where the plaintiffs fail in this case. Yes, they cite a number of facts, but they never show how those facts would affect the outcome of the case, how those facts would say no reasonable jury could, or the reasonable jury could, find that there was race discrimination in this case. In fact, the evidence regarding race points to the opposite direction. There is the fact that Ms. Tyree approved the hiring of the plaintiff. If she had some bias against African Americans in the workforce, the obvious time for her to exercise that bias would be in the first instance during the hiring decision. So I would say in this case there's a strong presumption that bias would not enter into Ms. Tyree's decision on the reduction in force. The court below looked at the statistics. 4 African Americans were retained. The ratio of non-African Americans reduced to the African American reduced was approximately the same. Ms. Morrison in her deposition admitted that she had no basis to contend that by anything Ms. Tyree said or did to her that she was racially biased, so there is clearly no direct evidence of discrimination. With respect to the pretext issue, as I stated, this was done by Ms. Tyree doing the best job she could think of to get objective criteria to make this decision. And there is simply no evidence to show that the reasons given were unworthy of credence, that they were somehow phony. To the contrary, the evidence here is she did the fairest and most objective job under difficult circumstances. And as she said, unfortunately, the decision with respect to the plaintiff was her easiest decision because of what we just discussed. She was the most junior employee, and she had not had any formal performance review. In fact, how could Ms. Tyree justify retaining Ms. Morrison as against other more senior people who were also good performers? This was a difficult decision in the sense that Ms. Morrison was a good employee. We don't dispute that. But in these times where we're forced to have reductions, good employees sometimes get reduced. Ms. Tyree, under these circumstances, did the fairest and most objective job. she could do, and certainly to there is no basis for second guessing this decision and no evidence to support a claim of race discrimination. Therefore, if there are no questions, I simply request that you affirm the decision below.
Thank you, Mr. Warner. You have 2 minutes, Mr. Ward.
Our posture in the case, of course, is that the company is operating under pretext. We have listed a large number of individuals who are in a non-protected class, some of whom are similarly situated, others could be argued are not. Perhaps the most characteristic individual would be one by the name of Linda Michalik. Like Ms. Morrison, Ms. Michalik did not have a 2000 formal performance evaluation. Ms. Michalik was retained. Ms. Michalik is in a non-protected class.
What was her level of seniority?
She had been hired on some earlier date, but she did not have the 2000 performance evaluation, which was ostensibly the criterion being used by the company to make these final determinations.
How long had she been on the job?
I don't have her exact employment date, but my best recollection is about a year. We would argue, of course, the combined total of time that Ms. Morrison on the job was significantly greater. Also, the defendant in this matter had acknowledged and recognized that Ms. Morrison has made her prima facie case. We believe that the most controlling factor, given all of those points, is a memorandum that was introduced by the defendant in response to post-summary judgment pleadings, but which they raised in their appellant's brief, appellee's brief, and that is that the president of the company directed that the 2000 performance evaluations not be used in making the determinations on this second RIFT. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Ward. The case will be taken under advisement. The court thanks both Mr. Ward and Mr. Warner for their help this morning.